If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTradio.live. This time, it's not the Martians invading. The new truth is more terrifying. War of the Worlds with George Eliason and John Helmer on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
I'm George Eliason.
And I'm John Helmer.
And this is the radio broadcast from TNT breaking the news of the War of the Worlds. In front of the microphone, you won't be hearing armchair generals and think tankers paid to run propaganda for NATO and the Biden administration. Our microphone is fitted with a special filter to keep the propaganda and false expertise out. This is not the hour for repeating what you've already heard and rehashing what you already know. We aren't a crosstalk of reporters pushing their bylines in exchange for your money. We aren't the BBC's hard talk with its soft-centered confectionery manufactured at the Foreign Office and MI6. They are the alien invaders. This is the hour when you'll be able to hear the news breaking from the news fronts throughout Europe and from your ears to your brains. Not the alien invaders, but the fresh, original, human analysis of what the breaking news means. So sit tight. Here goes.
Thank you for the intro, George. I have to apologize to listeners very quickly. You may hear what you think of as a cold in the nose. It's not. It's an allergy. Now, it may be an allergy from what's coming off the spring trees, or I think it's an allergy to the approach of nuclear war. And I'm very afraid that in today's newsbreaking broadcast, we're going to show you exactly how close we are getting on June the 12th to a nuclear warfare incident between the United States and Russia. But in the meantime, let's talk about what we've got here today that you won't hear anywhere else. In the first place, we start with the strategic significance of Russia's defeat of the U.S. Patriot system. The Patriot system that is employed to defend every NATO ally the United States can think of. This has experienced significantly on May 16, more damage than the Pentagon has admitted, plus U.S. casualties. From the defeat of the U.S. Patriot system, we go to the change in Russian strategic operations, from the electric war, which we've talked about before, to Operation Wipeout. That's where the Russian military targets every fuel stock, every ammunition warehouse, every reserve of machines and manpower the Ukrainian side has built up for either what they call the offensive against Russia or for what they call their victory against Russia. Operation Wipeout is a change in Russian tactics we want to talk about. Thirdly, you've all heard overnight that President Biden announced, with the hand clapping from Prime Minister Sunak of the UK and other fellow travelers, that the decision to allow the dispatch of F-16 old fighter planes in NATO stocks, Dutch, Belgian, and other stocks of F-16s, a move that's been in planning for a long time, to provide what's called Ukrainian air power that the Ukrainian regime, headed by Mr. Zelensky, have been asking for publicly and endorsed by every U.S. and Anglo-American medium you can think of. This flies in the face of very clear warnings by former President Medvedev and President Putin and others that any F-16 deployment will be shot down. Our view tonight, and this is really important, we'll get to this in a minute, is that the F-16 move is in fact camouflage for what NATO and the United States plan to be an ambush of a much more serious and much bigger kind. That's a U.S. missile or cruise missile attack at standoff distance under the cover of Ukrainian F-16 and also under the cover of a NATO exercise called Air Defender 23, which begins purportedly in Germany on June the 12th. So we've got a lot of stuff to get through, George, a lot of surprise news, a lot of what our audience and we haven't considered, realized, or understood until now. So let's get closer and closer to the US war against Russia and what may be a nuclear battlefield alert starting on June 12th. That's just 3 weeks away, folks. How to start, George? Should we start with the defeat of the US Patriot system?
Yeah, let's start talking about that. Now, we had two components of it that were hit. It was the radar and the launchers. And what we're hearing is that $96 million worth of missiles were destroyed. And, you know, laughably, the U.S. is saying, well, we don't need to, you know, it's not even damaged enough to even warrant taking it off the field to repair. Is it because it's just destroyed? There's nothing left? What's really funny about this is there are posts popping up. The Ukrainians are actually selling parts of the system on eBay. That would be the only funny thing about this. But the fact that the Ukrainians were only given 8 weeks to learn the system and then employ it says a lot about who's actually running the system itself, which would be what they're calling trainers. In 8 weeks, you might learn how to turn it on and a little bit about it. But the training cycle for a system like this would be for each position, 6 months to a year. What do you think, John?
I agree with you, George. And for the benefit of our audience, we'll be providing on the website all the links you need to U.S. media sources for everything we're saying. So let's come down to what you said. There are, roughly speaking, according to National Public Radio, everybody respects NPR in Washington, D.C., don't they? 90 men, crew or women, crew a Patriot missile system. The six components of a missile system like the Patriot have generators, radar, control, antennas, launchers, and the missiles themselves. Six components. Now, when CNN mouthed the official version that only two components had been struck and that minimal damage had been inflicted, what they meant was, what they're concealing was, that the radars have been destroyed and that the control center was hit. That's where all the folks were. That's where the American casualties in this attack were suffered. And the interceptor missiles were destroyed. Now, one thing is the description of the destruction. What's left out are two crucial strategic military elements, political elements, you might say. In the first place, not only was the Patriot system hit, but it failed to get up into the air to intercept the Kinjal Russian hypersonic missile. That's to say, the Patriot system failed to intercept. That's its job. That's what the US has sold the Patriot to its NATO allies. Sold, I mean big bucks. Sold to its NATO allies as the US guarantee of its protection against what Russia can fly at it. The fact is, strategically, a major element of US protection of NATO failed in combat. It's been defeated. This is strategic. This is being omitted. It's not whether the damage was minimal. It's that they couldn't get the thing up. It couldn't be intercepted. This, by the way, let me start, go backwards. Admiral Kirby, the spokesman for the White House on military matters, said on May 17, the day after, he was asked what happened, what damage, and I'm quoting him. I'll use all the words he used. I cannot know. First of all, I cannot confirm the reports. I cannot confirm on whether the Ukrainians can repair the damage. That would depend on, he said, the scope of the damage. As to whether or not it can be repaired by the Ukrainians or whether we might need to help them, obviously, Kirby, if there was damage done to a Patriot system that needed to be repaired outside Ukraine, we would certainly assist with that. Now, that's the level at which the United States government at the White House and at the Pentagon hasn't said anything, Admiral Kirby's done all the talking, responded to the most significant U.S. weapons defeat in recent history. Okay? So it can't function the way the U.S. offers its NATO allies to do. That's profoundly important, because it leads on to everything else that's what's going to happen. Now, last December, there was no shortage of Russian warnings that this would happen. Dmitry Medvedev, the former president of Russia, said in December, quotes, even before reports emerged on the delivery of Patriot systems, he warned that if Patriots entered Ukraine, quotes, along with NATO personnel, they will immediately become a legitimate target for our armed forces. So back in December, NATO and the United States accepted the risk they were a target of war. Maria Zakharova, the spokesman for the foreign ministry, warned, repeated the warning, that if Patriots were delivered, they would be struck as war targets. Then on December the 25th, Christmas Day, Santa Claus arrived with President Putin's warning, quotes, of course we will destroy it 100%. Well, now it has been. And the best you can hear from the White House response are the words I've just quoted you from Kirby. So the United States has been defeated by Russia in the field for the very first time since the Germans attacked U.S. forces at the Battle of the Bulge in 1945. It's that serious, folks. What does it lead to? Let's come to that in a minute. The Kinjal strike, a hypersonic missile strike, has been reported by at least, pardon me, two Russian military reports as confirming what you just said, George. The radar station and five launches of the system were hit and destroyed on May the 16th. Where do we go from there, George? Okay, for the moment, George in Lugansk has been lost his line, so let me keep talking. Let me talk a bit more, and then we'll go to break in 2 or 3 minutes. My question to George, which you'll come back and answer in a minute, is where do we go from such a strategic defeat that it's so embarrassing it cannot be admitted in any medium in the United States? Answer, we go to a change in Russian tactics in targeting, in the pattern and the purpose and in the objectives on the battlefield of this very regrettable war. We've described on website, in print, and on this broadcast before that the Russian aim has been to save civilians but cut off their electricity, what we've been calling the electric war, the attack on the Ukrainian infrastructure that allows the Ukrainian military to attack the West. to attack from the west to the east. I'm getting a cue that George is back. Are you back, George?
Yes, no. I'm back, John.
Okay. You missed a bit.
Being in Donbass.
Okay. What we've come to quickly, and let's go to break in a few seconds, is the question of what happens after the strategic defeat of the major U.S. weapons system deployed not only in the Ukrainian battlefield, but all around Europe. What I have to point out is that the Russian side has moved from the electric war to Operation Wipeout. What does Operation Wipeout mean? It means that we now see every day from the Defense Ministry in Moscow, the report confirmed by video clips and reporting from the Ukraine, that the targeting of Russian warfare is now in the west of Kiev, in the west of the Dnieper River. What is being destroyed are anti-aircraft defense complexes, railway marshalling yards, warehouses that stock ammunition, like the depleted uranium shells that were blown up in Khmelnytsky last week, and are sending a radioactive cloud now towards England, the source of this ammunition. Fuel storages on the front and westward past Dnipropetrovsk to the west are being destroyed. So what's happening is a wipeout of all fuel, ammunition, stockpiles of weapon systems and manpower necessary for the Ukrainian military, not only to mount a purported offensive advertised by their president in the Western media, but to operate a war at all. It's what a NATO veteran source has told me is what he called a full-on campaign. What are you expecting, George, that happens next? We're at 20 past the hour. It's time for a break. Shall we break? You give us the cue, and then we'll come back and talk about this a little bit more.
Let's take a break then. And before we go, though, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest or host you'd like to hear on TNT Radio? Or simply, well, perhaps you have a topic you feel we should discuss. Well, we want to hear from you. Simply complete suggestion form on the TNT Radio website. Help us make a difference on TNT Radio.
Patrick Henningsen on TNT Radio.
What's interesting is just the sheer number of people out in support of the Russian Federation, the government. They understand that what's happening in Ukraine is an existential threat to Russia and its borders, its national security. And the public, I think broadly, what we can see from the various Victory Day parades scenes that we've seen across Russia in different cities, I've been tracking some of the highlights on social media, a Russian Telegram as well. And what we can tell is that there's a broad-based support in general for the effort to secure the Donbass, to liberate those areas that are being attacked by the sort of the Nazi elements of the extremist Ukrainian nationalist run out of Kiev, backed by NATO and the U.S. government, the CIA, and Britain and the other NATO countries involved in this proxy war. I think Russians understand it. Unfortunately, the West doesn't quite get it. They don't get it because this is one of the biggest propaganda jobs in modern history. We thought we'd seen it all, but ladies and gentlemen, you haven't.
Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Let's take advantage of the freedoms that we have while we have them to advance the kingdom's objective, to be salt and light.
Freedom is hard. Election security involves you, involves the voters.
This election, for people of faith, is vital that we see a change, because the war against Christians is at an all-time high.
Transparency is the key not only to having honest elections, but to maintaining public trust in those elections.
Our ability to vote is not being withheld from us. No one's trying to stop you from voting.
The one place the American people can have a say is at the ballot box. That's why the Democrats and the far left are working so hard to get rid of all election integrity.
We cannot let our elections be anything but transparent. It is at the very heart of freedom in a free society.
And if we lose America, I mean, it's all over, because the world has looked to America for hope.
Free and fair at salemnow.com.
War of the Worlds with George Eliason and John Helmer on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
I'm back. Let's struggle on without George and waiting for him to come back from Lugansk. Where we left off before the break was this. The United States government, with the one-handed applause of the Japanese, the British, and other allies in Hiroshima, of all places, have endorsed the idea that F-16 fighter planes will be released from their stocks in the Netherlands, in Belgium, and other places for what is described as Ukrainian Air Force combat against Russia in the air above the battlefield in the present war. This is one improbability. It's improbability George would have talked about and may come back to explain, that you cannot train Ukrainian pilots in the time available to operate F-16s and their weapon systems, their avionics and their air control for air combat against much more advanced, much more recent Russian aircraft in the amount of time that's been available. The likelihood, therefore, is that the F-16s, if delivered to the Ukraine, will either be shot down for their incompetence quickly, or they will be piloted by more competent Dutchmen, Americans, Poles, and others who are operating out of uniform as mercenaries. George is back. Are you back, George?
Yes, I'm back. And the point you're making, they're actually, I've seen interviews with former Navy pilots, F-16 pilots, that are volunteering for this. They're volunteering for this. So whether they're live or they're mercenaries, as this, you know, these people would be, it will be Americans and NATO member country pilots in those seats.
More than that, George, as we both understand, it's not simply an F-16 that goes up with an American at the controls, or Pole, or a Dutchman, or a Belgian. To support an F-16 in operation against a real air force like the Russian, you need US and NATO AWACS, air reconnaissance, radar and communications and electronic warfare controls. AWACS aircraft are currently operated out of German bases, out of Turkey. They're circling every day, not over the Ukraine battlefield, but over Poland and over Romania. You can follow on a very valuable website I recommend to all our listeners called Italmil Radar. It's an Italian website that shows you exactly what the flight paths are of the AWACS and other electronic warfare aircraft, British, French, American, Italian, out of NATO bases all around the battlefield to support F-16s if they operate. But this is much more serious. If and when Romania or Poland allows a purported Ukrainian F-16 to take off from an airfield outside of the Ukraine, that makes Poland or Romania a physical target for Russian attack. That brings Romania and Poland, two NATO states, directly into this war. Now, the situation is going to rapidly escalate, and I'm very sad, worried, frightened, I might say, not confident, frightened, and I urge you to understand this, that if we escalate to the point of a purported Ukrainian F-16 lifting off an airfield outside of the Ukraine, we are at NATO war with Russia. Second, what will happen immediately, and it's to be expected, the Operation Wipeout, the Russian military attack on the means, warehouses, fuel dumps, and so forth that I've explained, will include every airfield runway in the west of the Ukraine that can accommodate an F-16, will be attacked, will be destroyed. This will leave no place for the F-16 purportedly piloted by recently trained Ukrainians to fight, to operate, to train, to lift off. This means the war must go abroad, outside the Ukrainian battlefield. So what this apparent decision by President Biden to allow U.S.-supplied F-16s to enter the war means is a widening of the U.S. and NATO war. Now, what will happen next is perilous to think about. Let me explain. On June the 12th, a long-scheduled NATO exercise called Air Defender 23 begins. It'll run for almost 2 weeks, allegedly based at German air bases. It will include more than 200, that I'm reading from the NATO press release. Air Defender 23 will deploy 220 Allied aircraft, purportedly exercising to test and simulate what an Article 5 NATO treaty defense of NATO territory would mean. That's NATO talk for an attempt to simulate how NATO will lift off and try to fight Russia, pardon me, in the air from June 12th. Those aircraft will include the most advanced U.S. aircraft. Those aircraft, F-22s and others, will be operating allegedly from German bases or Romanian bases. They will be refueled by tankers operating over Romanian and Polish and German airspace. They will be backed by NATO and U.S. AWACS and other reconnaissance command control aircraft outside of the Ukraine. What's the immediate threat, as my Russian sources say, is that Air Defender 23 is the real NATO attack on Russia in the air. The so-called Ukrainian F-16 is pure camouflage. It's what's intended here is a NATO ambush of Russian aircraft. And why does that sound credible? Not just to Russians, but to the NATO veteran sources I have? Well, the answer is simple. It's happened before. You can even go to Seymour Hersh. I don't recommend it, but you can go to him or to innumerable others and understand that the NATO naval exercise in the Baltic Sea called Baltops last year was the camouflage for the preparations and the implementation of the attack by Germany, Sweden, Denmark, and Poland, and the United States, and the British, and the Ukrainians on the Nord Stream pipelines. Baltops, a NATO naval exercise, camouflaged the attack on Nord Stream. So we have to understand, and if we are guessing, believe it or not, the general staff in Moscow aren't guessing, that Air Defender 23 will be the attack thrust on Russian Air Force starting June 12 in the disguise of a Ukrainian F-16. Now, that brings us to the brink of direct U.S. NATO attacks on Russia. It's not camouflaged under the Baltic Sea as Nord Stream pipeline attack was. This is the most serious, most dangerous escalation, and we face it within 3 weeks, I'm sorry to say. What do you think, George?
Well, I really think this is hitting, you know, what you're saying is hitting the numbers, because it's been an open escalation this entire time. And the fact that they want to go to the edge, take it right there. Now, they'll come back with this in your home media with, this was a NATO exercise for defense, and the Russians attacked us. And that's how they're going to play it out. And this also will give them the opportunity to do that for their home audiences. It is deadly serious. And how close to this, an actual attack with that many aircraft in the air, how close to this does the Russian military have to get before they start acting? Is another question. Are you going to wait until they're flying? Are you going to wait until what? Right before they hit your national boundaries? As they're heading toward your national boundaries? And this entire time, you know, we've been playing touch and go in the Black Sea and in the Baltics, between Russian and U.S. and NATO force and NATO aircraft. So you had the drones in the Black Sea, and you had aircraft encounters on the Baltics, pushing each other back off, testing the waters. How many airplanes get to test the waters? And that's going to be, you know, it's a big question. Those decisions are already made.
The regrettable thing to say, George, is that the decisions have already been made. Not only was there the ambush of the Nord Stream pipelines disguised as a, quote, terrorist operation whose real origins have been hidden ever since, but last week there was an air ambush over Bryansk. Bryansk is a Russian territory, and there's now no doubt that two fixed-wing Russian aircraft and two helicopters were shot down by missile attack. 9 Russian pilots lost their lives. This is all very clear in the Russian media. The Ukrainian government in Kiev doesn't claim credit for this ambush. The Russian side have not discussed what they know about where the ambush came from, what missile systems were used, and what NATO, US, or other forces were employed in the setup, the execution, and the implementation of this attack. An ambush in the air as recent as last week over Russian territory has already occurred, with 9 Russian pilots killed and 4 aircraft down. There is nothing clearer on the Russian side, nothing more explicit in Moscow and in the general staff and in the Stavka and in the Kremlin than the plotting of the NATO side, desperate to save the Ukrainian regime on the ground, for these attacks in the air. That, I regret to say, is what's coming when so-called Air Defender 23 lifts off in so-called Germany. That's how close we are coming to war between Russia and the United States. It's awful to think of. I hope not only our listeners, but our colleagues, the military colleagues who broadcast on Andrew Napolitano's website and others, we appeal to our colleagues to recognize the danger of this escalation in the coming days. Maybe we have to go to break. George, what do you think?
Yeah, we've got to take a quick break and we'll be right back. This is War of the Worlds with John Helmer and George Eliason on TNT Radio Live.
With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Plus ça change, plus c'est la même chose. The more things change, the more they remain the same. The Durham Report released this week detailed voluminous crimes committed by FBI, election interference, lying to FISA court judges, falsifying testimony, suborning perjury, many crimes. Election law violations by the Clinton campaign. The list goes on and on and on and on and on. And yet, there will be precisely zero consequences. And nothing will change. Headlines today, FBI agent security clearance revoked for sharing a Revolver News article about January 6th. FBI jackboots unexpectedly show up to the childhood home of pro-life activists. Quote, they see me as a threat. And most tellingly, FBI fails to comply with subpoena deadline on Biden crime family related documents. DOJ and FBI are corrupt top to bottom. What America needs is an attorney general like Edward Levy, whom President Gerald Ford brought in 1975 to restore order and integrity to both the Department of Justice and the FBI. That's what needs to happen here. Heads need to roll, and malefactors in the department and bureau need to be indicted, arrested, perp-walked, prosecuted, and imprisoned. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Natural disasters may seriously threaten civilization in the future. Yet the mainstream media peddles a pseudo-scientific man-made climate crisis. Natural climate change is a real threat, and historical records show that global cooling is the biggest killer, not global warming. Cooling may arise from astronomic phenomena, including solar cycles, and volcanic activity can play a major role too. For example, in 1815, Mount Tambora in Indonesia underwent the most deadly volcanic eruption in recorded history. Enormous amounts of dust and ash destroyed crops and vegetation, killed tens of thousands of people, and the eruption led to tsunamis. The following year, 1816, was known as the Year Without a Summer, as abundant frost and ice continued all year. Newspapers of the day reported extensive crop failures in Europe and the United States.
This is War of the Worlds on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
We are back again. George, unfortunately, the line to and from Lugansk is coming on and off, so he'll come back, we hope, in a few seconds. So we are back in the last segment of the program, in the few minutes to remain. Let me move to another set of surprising news that you won't be reading about in the mainstream U.S. media. This is direct from the Worcester, Massachusetts federal court on Friday, yesterday, where Jack Teixeira, the young airman who worked in the intelligence unit of the Massachusetts Air National Guard under the U.S. Air Force, who's been accused of and is charged and indicted with and is in prison for espionage, spying against the United States for the benefit of its enemies, and for leaking information, classified top secret information, Teixeira was not entitled to have access to, let alone to distribute to anybody else. Now, we've talked about the Teixeira case in this broadcast already, and you'll find considerably more detail on the Dances with Bears website and all the court documents you need to read in order to understand what this case is really about, what the evidence is against Teixeira, and what his defense will be. In particular, you have to read the new post I've just put up this Saturday today on the Dance with Bears website. in which you can read the court documents submitted by the U.S. government prosecutors, in this case on Wednesday. That's 2 days ago before the hearing was held on Friday. George, you're back again, and we're already on Jack Teixeira case. Did I leave out a summary point you wanted to make about the dangers of approaching war? Or we go to Teixeira?
Actually, I did, if I could make the point.
Yeah.
Now, all of this is heading this way. Because the storehouses for the depleted uranium rounds are now airborne contamination floating towards Poland and Europe. So all those weapon stores are a non-starter now on the battlefield. What was released in the Shira leaks is being confirmed on the actual battlefield. Now, more or less a propagandist for Ukraine interviews members of the International Brigade. They're fighting down by Bakhmut, and Bakhmut today is one apartment complex from being taken. It's a clean sweep, we'll call it. But what they're saying from the battlefield, and these are Americans, Australians, and Brits that are there, is that the way Ukraine is setting up the battlefield, now this is across the region, is that the axis has been placed too far from each other. And when they attack, if one gets bogged down, they don't have any support or help. And if Ukraine had any tactical competence, it would really mitigate the situation, but they don't. The Western-style combined arms offensives have all failed. And Ukraine's drunk soldiers are getting lost or blown up with ATGMs. And they're making very limited advances near Bakhmut. And this is despite being Ukraine's better units. Now, furthermore, and it's important to know these... that the units themselves don't have the confidence to go into battle. What they're seeing is that even with all, you could send all the weapons, you know, that they need, but the strategy itself is wrong. And no matter what else happens, even if they make a limited advance, the units themselves, the formations are going to be lost to the artillery. Attacking Zaporozhye, Bakhmut, Donetsk, or Lugansk is actually out of the question and out of the capability of Ukraine. And that makes what John was talking about in terms of this Baltic air exercise, supposed exercise, all the more pressing in terms of the possibility that this is going forward exactly like you've heard described today.
Thank you also, George, for pointing out that what Jack Teixeira's accused of is the leaking of Pentagon papers, that's the briefing papers and intelligence accepted by the Joint Chiefs of Staff, including the commanders of the United States Air Force, the United States Navy, the United States Army, and military and Marine Corps, that there was no prospect that the Ukrainian military could win this war. And there was every risk that continuing the war, escalating the war, arming the Ukrainians even more, risked the U.S. force capability to defend NATO. That's the implication of the JCS, Joint Chiefs of Staff documents, purportedly leaked by Teixeira. Increasingly, you will see, if you read the documents I've put on my website from the courtroom, the court document in Worcester, Mass., from Wednesday to Friday, you can see that Jack Teixeira had no idea that this is what he was doing. And that's the incredible implied evidence that nobody's picking up from the courtroom. Let's go back to what the court documents revealed between Wednesday and Friday of this week in the state of Massachusetts show. They show that the United States Air Force knew what Teixeira was doing was wrong. He was taking notes from viewing computer files to which he had no need to know and no job reason for looking at. He was rebuked in September. He was rebuked in October. He was ordered to cease and desist. That's what the documents show the United States Air Force at his base told Teixeira to do. Teixeira was then warned again on January 30 of this year. So the United States Air Force command above Teixeira knew exactly what he was doing. But by the way, he was taking notes, sticking pieces of paper in his pocket, and then having to give them up so they could be shredded. Given his orders, don't do this again, Jackie boy. But what's more relevant is there's no sign that Teixeira himself had access to Joint Chiefs of Staff briefing papers, which were purportedly written at the end of February and then released publicly in March and then discovered by the New York Times. What we learn is that Teixeira himself said on the FBI record in court on Wednesday last, he had no intention of leaking in such a way as he recognized Chelsea Manning had leaked to Julian Assange for the WikiLeaks disclosures that landed both of them in prison. He said he was not interested, not willing, not motivated to do any of that. He wasn't a whistleblower, folks. Teixeira knew that what he was doing was illegal, and he tried to stop it. We know that. He knew he was under investigation from September for 6 months before the so-called Pentagon Papers leaks. We know that he said he wouldn't continue to do it because it would be like, he said, and I'm partly quoting, it would be like me shooting myself in the back of the head twice. I'm not such a fool. Second, he shows in the FBI record of what he was saying, he wanted a nice, what he called comfy job in a military intelligence contractor in Texas or somewhere a bit warmer than the state of Massachusetts. This fellow, a youngster, a junior military intelligence technician, didn't want to blow whistles. He didn't want to expose U.S. secrets. He didn't apparently have access to the JCS material he's now accused of leaking. Now, this raises serious questions, which the defense attorneys are going to say represent entrapment, collaboration, connivance from superior officers in the United States Air Force to make what is accused to Teixeira of leaking come from somewhere else for a different purpose. The political purposes of the leaks of the Pentagon Papers in March and April, that's just a few weeks ago, were way beyond Jack Teixeira's mentality, his understanding, his intention, his consciousness. This is what's revealed last Friday. Of course, the judge in Massachusetts, Judge David Hennessy, rejected a bail application and told the government it could keep Teixeira in jail until the trial comes up. That gives us months of time for the defense attorneys to look as carefully as I've just told you, you can see at the evidence against him. And they'll formulate a plea. They haven't argued yet a plea even. But this is how serious the Teixeira case documents show. There was United States Air Force complicity in what happened, which means Joint Chiefs of Staff collaboration in the leak. And that's a political story that you won't read anywhere, not in the alternative media yet, not in the mainstream media yet. We don't have much time, George, but if listeners want to read these court documents, go to the website, Dances with Bears, look at the recent story. It was posted just a few hours ago, and read the documents for yourselves and make up your own mind. This is an extraordinary cover-up of a criminal case that has a political purpose that's yet to be discussed.
Well, and here's a point. I mean, what you're taking from the documents, here's a guy that didn't want to be a leaker. And he was taking notes, but, you know, it doesn't record him making copies.
Exactly.
That's
right.
Also up in the air. So what is it? I mean, did he sleepwalk his way into this and just, you know, wake up one morning hungover and say, oh my gosh, what did I do? You know, I don't think so. So finding out what happened, and quite frankly, the defense you described is more than appropriate for this. And the other part of it was they denied bail, or they denied his release pending the trial because he's a danger to society. Have you seen any violent connotations in the legal that, you know, I missed? Because I haven't seen anything that, you know, even suggests that this kid is, you know, remotely violent to anybody. How could he be a danger to society?
That story is coming from the New York Times. It's coming from a bunch of reporters, including the Bellingcat reporter, Arik Toller. Bellingcat is now included in the way the New York Times is reporting this case. The evidence the New York Times reports, that Bellingcat reports, is coming directly from the FBI and directly from the prosecution. It's a unique case in which Bellingcat, a well-known British and NATO intelligence outlet, working with the New York Times, a newspaper, are helping to prosecute a man for offenses which so far in court, none of the US documents in evidence established that he had intention, motive, or readiness to follow. In other words, prosecution of this guy is coming from the New York Times and Bellingcat. That's extraordinary. The interpretation that he's violent, that he's anti-Semitic, that he's racist, all of this stuff comes from the newspaper and from Bellingcat. It's not substantiated in what the FBI has testified to in court. It's hearsay. It's not substantiated in anything printed about what Teixeira has said. So we're running out of time, George. We have a patsy on trial for doing something some senior military generals in Pentagon wanted to surface. What a story that's not being reported.
Exactly. And the part about it that's, you know, it's kind of scary is you can't do this unconsciously. So how did this actually develop? Because it throws a lot, the court documents, instead of clarifying things, actually throw a lot of clouds around it. And so, you know, watching this develop is, it's going to be really, really interesting.
You'll have to come back, folks, to War of the Worlds and TNT Radio, because you can't hear about this in the alternative media, not yet at least, and you certainly can't read about it in the mainstream media, which have taken the view, not like the Ellsberg version of the Pentagon Papers, in which the media took the view of against the Vietnam War. This is a case where the media are taking the view in favor of the Ukraine war and encouraging an escalation which will be perilous for us all.